You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Cedar.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
Ever get the feeling you've been cheated?
It is Thursday, July 14th, 2011. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Today on the program, Mark Leon Goldberg of UN Dispatch is going to talk to us about one of the details of the killing of Osama bin Laden that I hadn't heard about, and just why it is so problematic, particularly in light of, well, the recent polling that suggests the standing of the United States in the Arab world is at an all-time low. He will also talk to us about the UN's torture rapporteur and the issue they have with the United States. We'll give you an update on the debt ceiling as well, and News Corps, and other stories, of course, as well as our famous post show for members only. This story, rather funny. You know, and we get this every year. There's an election, that being that the Jews have finally come to their senses and have stopped being so mashugana and have decided to finally turn their back on Democrats. You'll recall that Jews are, as a group, probably the second most consistent voting bloc Democrats have. But now, of course, the right wing is trying to argue that they are going to abandon Obama in the 2012 election. It has been thoroughly debunked, this poll. It was been called by just about everybody an expensive push polling. However, it is in that context, I think, that it makes sense that Michelle Bachmann now, who is the second highest polling Republican for the Republican presidential nomination, is out there trying to appeal to Jews. She must have gotten hold of one of those old, I had one of these. It's like a pamphlet, how to sell to your Jewish merchants from like the 1950s. And it says, you know, the key is always drop in a little bit of Yiddish when you're trying to sell them, because the Jews love to hear some Yiddish. And Michelle Bachmann, now on Fox, trying to appeal, I think, probably to the Jewish vote, heads on Fox News. Hopefully Fox News will be around in time for the election, or we won't get little nuggets like this. With News Corps problems, Fox News could very well be gone by then, for all we know. But here she is, Michelle Bachmann, trying to show her Jewish bona fides by using the word chutzpah in a sentence. Shall we?
Here's the big issue. The president doesn't want to have to be confronted with priorities in spending because he has a lot of chutzpah. He spent $1 trillion on the stimulus. It failed.
Yes, he has a lot of chutzpah. You might say that he's a putzy. Unbelievable. Can we play that one more time?
Here's the big issue. The president doesn't want to have to be confronted with priorities in spending because he has a lot of chutzpah. He spent $1 trillion on the stimulus. It failed.
This guy's a putzy. He's a schmuck. A shmash mocha. Kaka. There she is, Michelle Bachmann, doing her best to appeal to Jewish voters by dropping in a little Yiddish. Maybe I gotta sell some shmeta to somebody. What's a couple of shekels with the chutzpah? Michelle Bachmann, thank you so much. Thank you so much for declaring your intentions to run for president. You'll make this next year quite enjoyable. All right, folks, we got to take a break. When we come back, we'll be talking to Mark Leon Goldberg on this really disturbing story aspect of the killing of Osama bin Laden. As if the fact that we are no longer capable of trying people in the United States for war crimes or these type of issues, this just adds to the problems. We'll be right back after this. Back, Sam Cedar on the Majority Report. On the phone, we have Mark Leon Goldberg. He is the managing editor of UNDispatch.com. Welcome to the program, Mark.
Thanks for having me, Sam.
And so let's start first. There's two stories I wanted to talk to you about. The first being this story that has been getting very little play, as far as I can tell. I don't even know if it's been hit really much of the U.S. media. But this story that The Guardian reports in terms of the way that the CIA tracked bin Laden, or at least got closer. Tell us about the story and why it's so problematic.
Sure. So The Guardian reported earlier this week that the CIA, as part of a ruse, to gather intelligence on bin Laden in Abbottabad, Pakistan, you know, where he was holed up, where he was hiding for all those years, concocted a fake vaccination campaign where they sought allegedly to collect some DNA samples from bin Laden or his family members inside the compound. But to do so, they pretended to give vaccines to people in the surrounding area.
And what kind of vaccines were they supposedly giving at this point?
Well, what The Guardian reported that they gave one dose of a hepatitis B vaccine, and that vaccine actually requires sort of two doses to be effective. It requires follow-up, and it's unclear whether they did any of that follow-up. But what makes this story really problematic is that, you know, vaccines are tied with this concept of polio eradication. Pakistan is one of four countries in the world that in which polio still exists. It's been virtually wiped out almost everywhere else, but it still remains in Pakistan, Afghanistan, India, and Nigeria. And part of the reason why polio is still endemic in these countries is this widespread belief among certain segments of the population, mostly among the rural poor, that these vaccines, these polio vaccines, are part of an American or foreign plot to sterilize Muslim children. And so this sort of ruse seems to confirm all the sort of darkest fears that people have about the polio vaccination efforts.
Are you aware of any of the implications? I mean, you know, if we're talking about this story, I imagine it's just a matter of time before this story starts to spread throughout Pakistan, if it hasn't already.
Yeah, I mean, that's right. Like, one of the key challenges is for health officials to convince the local population that this is good for their children. In 2007, there was a similar scare where some clerics again, concocted this misinformation campaign that the polio vaccine was meant to sterilize their young girls. And as a result, the World Health Organization estimates that at least 24,000 children who ought to have been vaccinated did not get the vaccine. Wow. And so this is sort of just a persistent myth that exists in that part of the world, and also in certain Muslim regions of Nigeria and India. Now, to their credit, there are some other very responsible Muslim leaders, notably the government of Saudi Arabia, that has been pushing back against this misinformation. They actually require that all pilgrims making the Hajj to Mecca take the polio vaccine before entering the city. So there's efforts to push back against this, but again, this fear sort of still exists, and it's terribly problematic in the global effort to finally once and for all eradicate polio.
I got to imagine Leon Panetta, who was the chief of the CIA at the time. I mean, he must have known this as well, right? I mean, there must be some level of awareness in the U.S. government that this is a problem. Do you think it was just simply a calculation of, well, you know, what are you going to do? We have a chance to identify bin Laden in this situation.
You know, I think that those kind of hard prudential interests probably won out in the debate, if there was a debate at all.
Right.
But, you know, you have to, again, put this in perspective. In 1988, there were over 300,000 cases of polio around the world. And the international community came together. The U.S. and the CDC was a big player in this. So it was Rotary International, actually. They're the ones who should really be annoyed about this, because they led this global polio eradication effort since 1988. And last year, there are fewer than 2,000 polio cases around the world. And so it's on the cusp of eradication, but things like this make ridding the world of polio that much harder.
And do you think? My guess is that this was not even discussed as an issue. I mean, I can't imagine anybody raising this in the White House and not being laughed at. I mean,
well, polio, you know, this was such a close hold that I would imagine that the relevant desks of the State Department or USAID just had no idea this was going on.
Right. All right. Well, I mean, it's a sad story, and it's a disturbing story. I mean, that has gotten very little play, and I appreciate your posting it on undispatch.com. Now, I want to just touch on another story that we've been following. Bradley Manning, of course, has been held now by the United States. Bradley Manning accused of leaking the information of that has basically gone on to be known as the WikiLeaks Cablegate cable leaks. And he's been held by the United States now for probably over a year and a half. Much of that time was in Quantico in 23 hours of solitary confinement. There were reports that he was sleeping in a burlap bag, that he has no pillow, that he's not allowed to exercise. They have since moved him to another facility based upon all the negative publicity. But there's another element to this story. The UN has been involved. Tell us about that.
Sure. So the UN human rights apparatus has representatives called special rapporteurs that focus on specific human rights issues. And one of them is Juan Mendez, who's the UN special rapporteur on torture and cruel and inhumane treatment. And my understanding is that sort of Bradley Manning's lawyers and peoples reached out to him to sort of investigate their claims that Manning was held in these intolerable conditions. And Mendez has been trying to access Manning, and specifically trying to have a private meeting, an unmonitored private meeting with Manning, which is sort of how these things work, that when sort of a UN investigator, human rights investigator, wants to investigate an issue, you know, that they ought not to have government minders looking over their shoulders. But the U.S. so far has refused that request.
Let's stop right there. Put a finer point on this. I mean, because we have a guy who has been charged. They've added charges as it has gone along. There's at least substantial reason to believe that his treatment If it is, it has been reported correctly, and there's at this point, there doesn't seem to have been any denial about the specifics of the treatment. They put him on suicide watch, and they did so without the proper authorization from psychiatrists at Quantico. If that treatment has been reported accurately, some speculate, and I see no reason why not to believe this, that they were trying to get him to implicate Julian Assange in this. And so the idea that somehow there'd be retribution by those people holding him, or some idea that they would be intimidating him not to speak, that's not completely out of bounds, is it?
No, it's not. But this I think speaks to an issue larger than Manning or WikiLeaks itself. And that's the idea that the United States, as a supposed champion of human rights around the world, ought to be willing to have the same standards that apply to the rest of the world apply to itself. And you can contrast this with the U.S.'s, responsible, I'd say, positions at the Human Rights Council in Geneva, arguing for investigations into alleged crimes in Syria. And so far, the Syrian government has not let any sort of investigator into their midst. And, it's sort of this double standard where, the United States is trying to, promote human rights around the world through these sort of UN human rights mechanisms, which is a good thing, I think. But when it, push comes to shove, they don't seem to be willing to hold themselves to the same standards.
Do you think that what took place in Abu Ghraib, what took place in reports of what's taken place in Bagram and Guantanamo Bay, and now this with Manning, in the context of the United States at the UN and calling for human rights, has it fundamentally undercut our moral authority?
I wouldn't say it fundamentally does. It certainly doesn't help. When the United States, takes hold of an issue and pushes hard for it and does the right sort of things to have other countries come alongside with it without sort of, using force, but using diplomacy. The sort of international community can be a pretty effective way of promoting human rights around the world. And the U.S. at the Human Rights Council is a good example of this. The U.S. has been a pretty responsible player there. But again, you have these human rights rapporteurs can be very, Brookings Institution put out a report recently saying that these can be really, catalysts for human rights around the world. But the single biggest obstacle in their face is harassment by governments and uncooperation by governments. And the United States just doesn't seem to be leading by example here. And that's what I think is most problematic about this.
So what's the next step for the human rights rapporteur from UN? I mean, is it simply
all he can really do is take his issue to the press. He can ask his, he has issues press statements that get picked up here and there, but he has no ability to force any government to do anything. And again, that's why this idea of peer pressure for, supporting the rights of these human rights mechanisms is so important, because in the end, they themselves don't have any power. They can't sanction governments. The only other governments can do that. And the only way that they'll do that is if there is this sort of common understanding that these are standards that we ought to hold everyone to, not ourselves included.
Mark Leon Goldberg from UNDispatch.com. Thanks so much for joining us today and updating us on both these stories.
All right. Thanks, Sam.
All right, folks, we got to take a break. We'll be right back after this. And when we do, more on our... I think this is some of the best debt ceiling coverage anywhere. I watch the other shows. I listen to the other radio programs. Sam Stein yesterday, I listened to that interview again. I feel like I know exactly what's going on. And I'm horribly depressed by it. when we come back, more on the debt ceiling, update on the News Corps story. Even mumbles mouth Peter King from New York, calling for investigations. Some listener email when we get back. story about Anonymous. And because it's Thursday and tomorrow's Friday, I'm finally going to get to that pot story that I know will get Jimmy Reefer Cake in the right frame of mind to send in a song tomorrow. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back after this. All right, we're back. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report. Quick reminder. I don't know if reminder is the right word, but the ACLU has FOIA'd, that is a Freedom of Information Act, the CIA and Director of National Intelligence for any information regarding Professor Juan Cole. You recall a story that came out I think it must have been back in June, because I believe it was around the time of Netroots Nation, that Professor Juan Cole was one of those people spied on by the Bush administration because he was so vocal and prominent in his opposition to our involvement in Iraq. I would love to see these FOIAs, because I got to say, I don't know if there was any program, any outlet that had Professor Juan Cole on it more than the Majority Report, Sam Cedar Show, Cedar on Sundays. I would venture a guess that we were close, if not the first, to put him on radio, or at least national media, and had him on more than anywhere. That would be awesome. If I could end up in one of these Freedom of Information Acts. You know, when I got to say, say that the FOIA asks for emails, letters, faxes, or other correspondence, memoranda, contemporaneous notes of meetings or phone calls, reports, or any other material relating to the gathering, collecting, copying, collating, generating, or other use of information and material regarding Professor Cole. It is addressed to the CIA, Director of National Intelligence, and the Department of Justice. I imagine we will not see anything from this based upon our government's response to FOIAs for probably, I don't know, maybe I can give it to my daughter for her wedding present, my six-year-old daughter. And I don't intend to marry her off, like when she's 12. Let's put it that way. So I think it's going to be quite a while. Speaking of blasts from the past, when I was driving to New Jersey to do Kudlow show, and we've posted that at majority.fm. You can see the video of me on Kudlow if you aren't one of the eight people who watch that program. And my driver on the way back, Israeli guy, says to me, he goes, "You don't spell your name with the C." "No, it's S-E-D-E-R. "I know, I Googled you." "Oh, I remember. The Secret Service grabbed you. I remember that. It's hilarious." So we spent the whole car ride talking about that time the Secret Service grabbed me at the Republican National Convention for walking around the floor of the Republican National Convention holding a sign, "I want to speak to a gay Republican." And actually, I think that's on YouTube. Somebody clipped that from the RNC versus the People DVD, which is one of the DVDs. We still have not a ton of those, but some of those left for membership swag. So if you become a member, you can get the whole thing. I think at one point I actually asked Ann Coulter if she is Andy Kaufman. She's like, "I don't know who that is," which I find very, very hard to believe. And then I think I told her that a dinosaur still wags its tail 10 minutes after its head's lopped off. And I think you can see that with her ever-diminishing book sales. It's going back and forth like this. I think Olbermann was talking about how her book sales have sort of diminished over the years. And she was quickly headed to irrelevance. I mean, can you imagine, though, if Fox News does get shut down? Now, I think we're ways off from that. But like I say, you now have bipartisan calls for investigations. And Peter King, of course, it's okay to any of the other spying is fine, but spying on the families of 9/11 victims, Peter King's going to start strutting like a peacock. Let's go to some listener emails. Over the past couple of days, or at least yesterday, I believe it was, in response to the story on the congressional Republicans attempting and failing at repealing the energy efficiency bill that George Bush signed into law, which requires incandescent bulbs as of 2012 to be 30% more efficient. It doesn't ban them. Right wing will argue that, well, no one's going to be able to afford it. And you're going to get these fluorescent light bulbs, which nobody likes because it's blue light. And you know what you can do with those fluorescent light bulbs? The thing is, they don't get hot. And so you can put them in like you can surround them with like yellow paper, or I think they're coming out with I've seen people do it. It's actually quite nice. And so then we were talking about it in the post show. And I should also ask the I can't remember his name now, the head of the committee who drafted this legislation back during the Bush administration, has now come out against it so they could retain his committee chairmanship. That's how absolutely nuts the Republican Party has become. So somebody said on the IM in the post show, you know, you drop one of those light bulbs and you've got more mercury there. You're going to have to get a hazmat suit to clean it up. And then I've since been corrected. There's less mercury, writes Ian, in a CFL bulb than in a can of tuna, which doesn't speak well for tuna these days, ladies and gentlemen. But the myths about it are ridiculous. You should give burnt out CFLs to a recycling plant in New York State or city, at the very least. You can simply throw them out in the trash if you're a resident. If you're a business, apparently you have to. And then your business, you have to take them. You have a different process. You can also get LED bulbs, he says, for $15 to $18 at Home Depot. So thank you for that. And also following up on our reportage, I believe it was in the post show, can't remember, on the plan for Texas Governor Rick Perry, who apparently also has horrible poll ratings, even in Texas, because he was touted as one of the saviors of the Republican presidential primary clown car race. Governor Rick Perry is calling for a National Day of Prayer, isn't it, Matt? Is that what it is? In August, right?
National Day of Prayer in August.
A National Day of Prayer in August.
National Day of Prayer in August.
To get rain, right, in Texas. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, I think this one's actually for the country.
Oh, for the country to get rain.
For the country to be saved because of what we're going through right now.
Well, part of that would involve rain as well, because there's a huge, massive drought over 18 states in the country. And Texas is one of the worst-off states. Tony writes in, says, one reason to pray for rain in August is that it takes advantage of the Texas rainy season. This occurs every year during hurricane season, which usually starts at the end of August. If they started praying now, people might not think it worked in time. The inevitable happens. These guys will claim credit when the first tropical storm brings rain. If they experience a devastating hurricane, however, I think they'll be praying that nobody claims any connection. Well, that's the thing, is if it's a hurricane, then they blame the gays. Right? It's the gays, it's the sodomites who bring the hurricanes. It's just the good Christians who pray and bring rain when you need it. And finally, James O'Keefe sent out another desperate email. You remember James O'Keefe? He is the merry prankster who likes to make fake videos, taking down places like Acorn, lying about NPR, lying about trying to molest the CNN reporters. I think he's on probation right now for a federal offense and attempting to tamper with Mary Landrieu's phone systems in her Senate office down in Louisiana. he is sent out an email saying that his nonprofit group, remember that his nonprofit fake video generating group, Veritas, Project Veritas, which needed $50,000, they announced several months ago, to do God's work in exposing the liberal conspiracies. He says that his nonprofit group needs $30,000 right away. All caps. Right away! To finish his latest sting operation that he claims, quotes, dwarfs anything Project Veritas has exposed to date. Maybe he's doing an expose on how he's taking money from all these chumps. I can't reveal all the details yet, but I can tell you that we have evidence of government employees gladly offering public assistance to individuals representing themselves as drug smugglers and members of terrorist group. I can't wait for this one. The worst part of this fraud is it isn't isolated or even hidden. It's nationwide and out in the open. $30,000. They need it right away. Now, ladies and gentlemen, as you know, much of last year, I made a series of videos called That's Bullshit. I edited these videos myself. Occasionally, I hire an editor to edit my videos. I have produced television programs, movies, pilots that never made it to air, both independent ones, both for Fox, the channel, through NBC Studios, for Trio. My film is on DVD now. You can also get any of these, most of these productions. You can get them by becoming a member. $30,000 of editing buys you, let's see, I mean, a good, you know, a decent editor on Final Cut Pro. And I'm talking not just a decent editor who can actually cut the stuff up, but actually can weave together a story. In New York City, anyways, which I would assume rates are about as high as they get, $400 to $500 a day. $400 to $500 a day. Do the math here. $400 a day, that's 10 days, gets you $4,000 times 10. You're talking about 100 days of editing. 8 hours a day. Now, the reason why they need $30,000 is probably, they need probably about $3,000 to hire the editor and then $27,000 to pay them to have no scruples in creating a fraudulently edited piece. So there it is, James O'Keefe asking for money. And if James O'Keefe can do it, I can do it too, folks. Let me read off a thank you to some of our members who support this show. Not only do they get the membership benefits, extra 50 minutes a day of programming, the DVDs, the Undying Love, soon the raccoon video. I wasn't having problems at home. Maybe I'll talk about it at the post show. Mila's having little issues right now. But they also make it possible for all of you to listen to this program. So I want to thank Rebecca Church from Minnesota. Thank you for your support. Walt Keegan, Avant, who not only is a member, but also is responsible for just about every aspect of the website. All the information you get there, that's because of Avant. And I want to thank Janet Scapin for not only her membership, but her generous donations to this program, which have been incredibly helpful. So thank you to the members. You can become a member today at majority.fm, and you should do it. because the show needs more members. I don't, you know, I keep saying that over and over again. Summer's a tough time. And, you know, frankly, I get about an email a day where someone writes me and says, I've been a supportive member. Sometimes people, it's like a Cedarista even, like a double membership, and they've lost their job. They can't they continue to support the show. And then I work out a deal with them where they can continue to get full access. But so those are the people who are supporting the show, people who are literally it is actually a big sacrifice for them, and they are subsidizing you. So keep that in mind. And like I say, can you? Is there any place you can get better debt coverage? You listened to that that interview with Sam Stein yesterday, and there is no one in the country who will know more about what's going on than you. Well, I guess Sam Stein. Bill Gross, that head of PIMCO, telling Washington, don't mess with the debt ceiling. On some level now, when you start to see these public op-eds, it is providing cover for the full-scale retreat that the Republicans are waging. Of course, the odd and sad thing is that as the Republicans retreat on their demands for cuts in the debt ceiling, if they end up buying into this McConnell deal, the Democrats, because of our Democratic president, who now by all accounts genuinely believes austerity is going to help the country. Certainly his Treasury Secretary believes that, and it is clear that Obama does too. Now, I don't know what is in his heart of hearts, but it doesn't matter. What matters is his actions and his rhetoric. And on both those accords, he clearly believes in the austerity fairy. Apparently does not read the newspapers about what's happening in Britain. Ezra Klein, no screaming, wild-eyed, dirty, effing hippie himself, has said that we've learned a lot about American politics in recent days. We learned, for example, that Republicans are more committed to keeping taxes low than to reducing the deficit. In other words, their deficit talk,
don't piss down my back and tell me it's raining,
is bullshit. We learned that the party is led more by the House Majority Leader Eric Cantor than by his nominal boss, Speaker John Boehner. Now, Cantor, incidentally, I want to give you a quote. This is Cantor after the after his meeting with President Obama yesterday. Apparently, Cantor pooped himself. He didn't like it because President Obama was mad at me. This is the same guy who has walked away from the talks before. It's just unbelievable. Cantor ran to reporters after the meeting and just said, "Yeah, that me."
Poopy, poopy, poop. Poopy, poopy, poop.
That's right. I got a poopy poop in my pants. And apparently Obama was a little fed up because Obama, that we have learned, according to Ezra Klein, that despite the prevailing theory that the Obama administration is going to seek the largest tax increase it would could possibly pass, it really wants the tax issue off the table as soon as possible. President is willing to take much less in revenue in exchange for spending less time arguing about taxes. And he says another mistaken view of Obama is that he considered a deficit reduction deal good politics and perhaps inevitable policy. In other words, okay, I can't fight the fact that the Republicans have the upper hand here, that there is a rhetorical strength on the Republican side to cut, to enact austerity. I'll have to go along with it. But in recent weeks, Klein says, it's become clear that key members of the White House seem to believe a deficit reduction deal would improve the economy. In other words, Obama. Because that's what Obama is following their advice. Tim Geithner was at a recent congressional hearing on small business lending. He said, quote, if Congress can find a way to reach a bipartisan, comprehensive, balanced agreement to bring down long-term deficits, that would help. It would be a sign that Washington works, is able to come together to solve problems. That would improve overall confidence across the country. Actually, you know who said almost the identical thing 2 weeks ago? Was Ezra Klein. See, that's the problem with the economy. Because business leaders are unsure of what will happen with the long-term deficit. We are at a time where treasury bills, 10-year treasury bonds, are paying less than 3% interest. And the notion that somehow inflation is going to run rampant at a time where there is very little demand, when we're in at least a recession-like environment, if not technical recession, is absurd. It's absurd. So you want to talk long-term deficit? Deal with it by first creating jobs, getting the economy to grow, and making up for lost revenue. Obama left the... So you understand why Obama is so pissed now. Because he desperately wants a deal. And even though this McConnell proposal, as outlined by Sam Stein yesterday, would essentially allow the debt ceiling to rise, with Obama to get to pretend to make cuts, or at least to offer cuts, and then not have to enact them, is not enough. Now there's word that Harry Reid is suggesting $1.5 trillion cuts in a McConnell version bill, where McConnell would still get all of that kabuki theater and get the cuts. According to Reuters, Obama said, I've reached the point where I say enough. Would Ronald Reagan be sitting here? I've reached my limit. This may bring my presidency down, but I will not yield on this. No, Ronald Reagan would not have been sitting there. Why? I don't even understand what that means. But supposedly, Obama has said Friday is the drop-dead day. I don't know what happens after Friday, but maybe that's where he cuts off all negotiations. Meanwhile, South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham said Wednesday that he and his fellow Republicans are now eating their own words as they try and convince the country they're working to stave off a federal default. Our problem is we made a big deal about this for 3 months. How many Republicans have been on TV saying, I'm not going to raise the debt limit? You know, Mitch says, I'm not going to raise the debt limit unless we talk about Medicare. And I said, I'm not going to raise the debt limit until we do something about spending and entitlements. So we've got nobody to blame but ourselves, Graham told reporters after a GOP caucus lunch. We shouldn't have said it if we didn't mean it. Yeah, what are you going to do? All right, folks, we got to head into the post show. More coming up in the post show. Carmageddon in California. Peter King. In other words, calls for a News Corps probe. Folks, again, please, if you can become a member, please, 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 please do. Remember, you can always support the show if you're going to buy crap through Amazon. There are problems with Amazon. I get that. I understand it. I believe it. I agree. But if you're going to buy your crap through Amazon, do it through our link at majority.fm. Bookmark that link. You will at least kick some of that money back to the Majority Report so that I can continue to report on how Amazon is having problems. See that? See the way that cycle works? Also, one thing I can push you to without any hesitation or reservation is justcoffee.coop. You get coffee, you get tea, you get chocolate, fair trade, some of it organic. 10% discount with the coupon code MAJORITY at a time when coffee prices are going up. Take the 10%. Get great coffee. Don't be a schmuck. No, I mean a schmuck. Don't be a putzy. Come on, get some chutzpah. All right, folks, see you on the flip side.